earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father, Son. Thank you for feeding all living things on earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hello and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host. I have a great show for you today. We are revisiting Vincent and Claudia Pinto in the Sky Island region of Southeast Arizona. If you missed their show earlier, it's been about a month ago. If you missed their show, let me tell you just a little bit about them. Vincent is a naturalist, a wildlife biologist, and a survival expert. His wife, Claudia, is a passionate activist for the environment and for women's education. And they have so much to teach. They have nature school, nature science school for young people. They have classes for adults, all sorts of things that are valuable knowledge. And so they're going to share with us today. Vincent and Claudia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us again. We're delighted to be here.
Thank you, Caroline. Okay.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show. I understand you were just teaching some classes in the Chiricahua Mountains.
Yes, indeed. We had a private group from Phoenix there. And, coming from the heat and desert of the Phoenix area and all the urban buildup, it was wonderful for them to escape to the beautiful Chiricahua Mountains, which are in the heart of the Sky Islands region.
Mm. And what kind of class were you teaching?
We were doing a mountain nature expedition where we went up and I basically put my naturalist hat on and taught a variety of different subjects, anything from bird watching to tracking to going on wildlife safaris and finding different animals out there, obviously going to scenic vistas, waterfalls, things like that. So it was really a wonderful potpourri of topics, and they had a great time, and so did we.
Oh, that's wonderful.
As an ethnobotanist, this is a wonderful time of the year to visit the Chiricahuas because we just had very abundant monsoon rains that brought an exuberance of plants. And so it is always very fascinating for me as well to go out with Vincent and understand how all these plants can be useful from a medicinal and edible and a useful purpose in many realms.
Oh, that's wonderful. It sounds like such grand adventures that you have. It makes me want to just stop everything and go down and play with you, you know, go out in the woods and look for things and track things.
Definitely. We'd love to have you down anytime, of course.
Okay. For those of you listening...
Caroline, that's exactly the idea. We try to inspire people that are normally living a city life and are confined within an office or with the traffic and, you know, in a city type of environment. We try to entice them to get out there and not only leave all those, issues behind, but the technology gadgets that everybody is now completely surrounded by, and to go into the mountains and really be close to nature and understand the wealth of resources that are there ready to be leveraged if you know really how to use them to the best of your ability. So that is exactly our mission, trying to get people outdoors and try to educate them in all the richness that lies outdoors.
Well, you know, a lot of that knowledge is becoming like the lost world to so many of our young people today. And looking at your website, any of you that might be on the computer, take a look at ravensnatureschool.com. Their website is absolutely beautiful, and there's so many wonderful things you're doing. I was especially fascinated with the classes, the nature science classes you have for young people, because we have so many young people growing up in the concrete jungles of the cities, and they've lost all connection with nature. And so I'm just like, wow, this going out in nature, that's real adventure. Instead of playing a digital game on Game Boy, you know, where there's a lot of violence and they don't really teach values, go out in nature and have a real adventure. And of course, if we get the kids out, then the parents have to follow, right?
You know, I have a lot to say about educating youth. And I would say kids, especially teens, need and I believe crave rites of passage to help them transition from childhood into adulthood. Now look at societies from around the globe, and a common denominator in all these native societies, you might say, is that teens, especially boys, I would have to say, not having a physical change as girls do, had difficult ordeals that provided them just such a form. Now, what do we have? Sports, video games, Raven's Way Wild Journeys. We provide a wonderful space where kids and teens experience nature firsthand and discover that all of the inherent challenges within it provide significant growth opportunities. We also custom make programs so we can tailor nature challenges to help propel teens into adulthood. I mean, we have adults nowadays who never really reach that. They never reach adulthood, and they never connect with nature. So definitely it is becoming a lost art, unfortunately, and we're trying to revive it.
And it is also very empowering for people, for kids of all ages, not only to be out there and get all the benefits, but also to learn how to make cordage, how to make fire by friction, how to do shelters, which plants are suitable for medicine, which ones are edible. You know, it empowers them with a set of skills that is absolutely priceless, and they grow up to become much more balanced human beings and hopefully pass on that love of nature to their own families and their own kids.
Yes, and that is so important today. And just reconnecting with nature is so healing. There's a tremendous power in nature. And when that's missing in people's lives, it's like there's a void. You know, we need nature. It's a part of us. So,
you know, it's an inherent part of us, definitely.
Yes.
I just wanted to say something about that, which is, you know, without nature, which is something we seem to be turning into not only a commodity, but a thing or a place to visit rather than just life. You know, we're stuck in a human spiral, I guess I would say, an inward turning spiral of just human created things, be they video games, TV, cars, all wonderful things in their own right, perhaps, but it's just human. When we turn to nature for wisdom, guidance, and knowledge, then we see an infinite spiraling out of knowledge from a tree, from a rock, from a cloud, from the infinite variety of life forms. So when people think of, say, nature as Disneyland, really missing the boat, and we try to reconnect people in the most primal and wild ways in experiential programs that allow them to, as Henry David Thoreau might say, suck the marrow out of nature to get the core teachings of nature.
Oh, and right now, with this epidemic that we have of kids being diagnosed with medications for ADHD and all sorts of behavioral issues, we have witnessed here firsthand in all the programs that we do with kids of all ages, their transformation, how they relax and they come into their own. As they arrive to Raven's Nest, we ask them to please leave all their technological gadgets in their backpack, in their tent, and to just try to put themselves in the mindset of how kids around here many, many, many years ago used to be raised and used to live off of the land and participating very actively in the village and in the community life. And it is fabulous to see the transformation, how much more relaxed they become, and really how the need for medication for anxiety and all these stressors that they're exposed to out there in city life totally diminishes.
That's amazing, because I really do think it's a great loss that is affecting our children today and affecting their image of themselves and who they are, their identity and everything. And so it's just really important work that you're doing. You work with some schools, don't you, to have groups of children come? to Raven's Nest?
Yes. Since we've established here in 2008, we've had a variety of different school groups come. Often they're Montessori-based schools. Sometimes they're homeschoolers. Sometimes they're large high schools, say, from Tucson. And we've custom-made programs, anything from an ROTC experience where they wanted hardcore survival skills, and we provided those sort of rites of passages to these young men, to custom-making for smaller groups, because the first group I just mentioned, that was about 30 kids. That was a big group. But we dealt with as few as 12, And with those groups, we focused more on nature, surveying the wildlife here, exploring, doing survival skills in a crafty type of way. So there are many sorts of nuances that we add to each program. But basically, we work with anywhere from first grade, though that's a little young for us, and we normally work from fourth grade up to high school and college. We've got Prescott College, University of Arizona here. So really, I think one of our fortes is we're able to deal pretty much with any age group whatsoever and provide them with exactly what they're asking for.
And custom making the class that is suitable for the either the agenda and the curriculum that the science teacher is covering in school, so to give them a hands-on experience, if you will, and to provide them with a canvas, for example, in the case of organic gardening. They may be at the school, be talking about the benefits of doing so, but here we provide them literally with the tools, the seeds, the land, and the opportunity for them to grow and plant, you know, a garden. So either we provide them with the hands-on experience, or we follow the, you know, science curriculum, allowing them to have, you know, the overnight camping with an outdoor classroom experience that is unlike anything they're exposed to in the regular school.
Now, yes, and I have to add, when we work with either schools, families, adults, elder groups, what have you, when we say custom-made, in a nutshell, I tell people, you give us the who, the when, and the what, and we'll tell you how much and where. And so we work it out very back and forth. So it's like making a carving. You know, we do it together, we create together, and everyone leaves with what they want.
That's great. I know you have such a broad spectrum of things that you teach, from botany, ethnobotany, ornithology, basket weaving, survival classes. What would you teach, for instance, and this is for adults as well as children. You teach survival classes. I know I studied with Tom Brown, but we did his class in the forest in Northern California. I live in the desert. I said, Tom, you need to come to the desert and teach me how to survive in the desert. Are you teaching classes about desert survival? Because it's a different ball game in the desert. You don't have the trees with all the debris that you can make a debris hut with and things like that.
That's right, Caroline. I have to say, no offense to any other wilderness programs out there, survival schools, what have you, and I am biased, of course, but I would have to say we have a one-up on all of them, and the reason is we live in the Sky Islands region where, yes, we range either Chihuahuan Desert or Sonoran Desert, which is hardcore, you know, very hot, very challenging, so that is very suitable for survival programs, up through grasslands, chaparral, Madrean evergreen woodland full of different oak species, junipers and pines, up into a tall pine forest, and finally topping out at spruce fir forest, reminiscent of Canada. So in other words, if you're coming from anywhere in the continental U.S., northern Mexico, Canada, or even parts of Europe and other places in the world, we're going to have a familiar set of plants and animals for you to work with. So it's not like you're going to learn skills here, go home and say, oops, these plants don't apply to where we're going. They'll apply. We'll take you to where you need to go to.
And indeed, our aspiration is to be able to empower people of all ages with that knowledge. So, of course, we were discussing kids earlier, but we work very heavily with adults and with people that have retired to the beautiful Sky Islands region over here from other states in the country, and that they winter here. We refer to them as snowbirds because they come and they spend the winter. And these are people that are very eager to learn about the new environment they spend half of the year at, and they're very thirsty for knowledge. So we work very much with that community. And families, sometimes we have people that have moved to the region from somewhere else, and they have decided that they want to, as a family, learn the skills and become empowered, you know, to be able to live better and in a more balanced way off of the land.
Okay, that's wonderful. And if anyone out there would like to call in and ask questions, we do have a call-in line. It's 323-203-0815. If you have any questions for Vincent or Claudia, you're welcome to call in. And we will be continuing to talk about the classes. I'm fascinated by even basketry, because if you're out in the wild, you really do need a way to carry things and something to put things in. Is this based on Native American type basketry, or how do you teach it?
You know, I would say yes and no. We focus primarily on coiled basketry because it's a technique that most people can pick up right away. Yet we show them the nuances of it. When you create a basket, often out of, say, agave fibers, that you could run a Mack truck over and is going to survive it and still function. You may just want to create a piece of art and go through the process of it. As I've been taught before in my life by elders, the process is the product. Of course, you do wind up with a very functional and beautiful basket of whatever size you want. Okay, so that's one thing we do. We also weave mats, we say drying, prickly pear, and other native foods. So, you know, the sky's the limit as far as basketry is concerned. We focus on function, but within that, we also try to make an artistic piece that you can put anywhere in your home and be proud of.
Great.
And it is the understanding of which local grasses and plants and which characteristics are suitable for the region that you may live in, for people that come out of state, to be able to start thinking about that process of weaving a basket locally where they may return to for home. So that, too, is a very empowering set of skills.
Yes, well, you have all of those different areas that you can draw from, because I know people, for instance, in Colorado that weave with willow, which they gather in the spring when it's very flexible and everything. And then, of course, in the desert, yucca leaves are used, right, for basketry?
Yes. We work with a variety of materials. We work with, say, Palmer agave is the largest native agave in the continental U.S., We do work with yucca fibers like banana yucca, for instance. I worked with willow before. So I try to teach people techniques and then say, hey, within these techniques, what are your material options? You may not have agave or yucca. What are you going to do up higher in the mountains or along a stream or what have you? So definitely whenever we teach a class in survival skills, we try to teach synonyms, if you will. In other words, replacement materials for the materials we're actually using during that class.
And I think it is important to say, too, that we have sort of a theoretical portion of every class that is here at our Stone Age village, where Vincent basically presents the objectives for the day. But then we go out. It's very experiential. We're fortunate to be surrounded by wild lands. And as far as your eyes can see, you don't see any evidence of civilization or human presence. So people get very inspired to then go out in a hike and go out wandering and themselves gathering the materials based upon the basic criteria that Vincent had discussed at the beginning of the class. So we try to follow that format for all the classes that we teach so that people are in a very participatory role and they're themselves out there gathering, selecting, and exploring which materials they find will be most suitable to weave that basket.
Ah, okay. So everything is hands-on and experiential. That's wonderful. You have an interesting class called, what is it, Thorns, Stingers, and Fangs? And that's dealing with what's poisonous or what can hurt you out there in the desert or the woods. Would you talk a little bit about that? Because people are fascinated by reptiles, I know. So.
Well, you know, Thorns, Stingers, and Fangs, and I'm actually teaching that class on Monday in Green Valley, not far from us, is a wonderful class because it speaks to our kind of primal fears of nature. And let's face it, today with all the sensationalism and the kind of fear-mongering, if you will, in nature, You know, a person bit by a great white shark or what have you always makes the news, whereas someone being, say, hit by a car doesn't. You know, we really need to pander the other way and say, hey, of course there are some minor inherent risks in going in nature, but the rewards are so much greater. So in Thorns, Stingers, and Fangs, Welcome to Arizona, you know, we cover a very wide variety, a plethora of animals and plants, if you will, because look at the title, Thorns, Stingers, and Fangs, that could potentially do you harm. Now, I say it could potentially do you harm. Many of those plants that have spines and even, say, poisonous steroids like agave in the tips, they also are some of the most useful plants, vis-a-vis, say, the basket tree we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. So we teach people not only to avoid and to be safe, but to interact with. Now, as far as dangerous animals go, it runs the gamut from, say, mountain lion and black bear encounters in terms of mammals to, of course, a plethora of rattlesnakes. We have more species of rattlesnakes here than anywhere in the U.S. Yet, and here's an instructive story, the other day, wandering a bit mindlessly outside, with shoes on, fortunately, our home, I wound up literally stepping on a rattlesnake because I wasn't paying attention. It was a big western diamondback, one of the most dangerous, and it didn't rattle. And it didn't even feign biting me. My size 14 shoes once extracted from it, and it was my full weight. It just glided silently away. Now, I'll tell you, if that rattlesnake wanted to bite me, it would have had the right to. I would have been in the wrong. So anything from that to other things that maybe don't have a decision process, the ones that scare me a little bit more, say, ants and bees and wasps, because they just, chemical clicks in them, they're going to attack you. So we distinguish between these things. We talk about their natural history, why they're so important, and why you can form a relationship with them and how that's going to enrich your life, rather than just be scared about them.
It's all about education. It's all about education, Caroline. In whatever realm we try to, you know, address, is trying to empower people with the knowledge, you know, how to react, what to do, what's poisonous, and what sort of the degree of danger, if you will, that you will face. And at the end of the day, people realize that it is really not as bad as it sounds. And once they understand, you know, what the real issues are, they're very excited to go out and they're very excited to be exploring, because most people in this society don't go out more because of fear. They're very concerned about that factor. But once you educate them, they relax and they really wind up enjoying very much.
Wonderful. Well, you know, they should understand that most wildlife really doesn't want to have encounters with us any more than we do with them. And I know when I grew up in Florida, north central Florida, lots of snakes in Florida, lots of rattlesnakes. And I was taught to stomp when I walked through the woods because Daddy said, well, if you make enough noise, the snakes are going to leave the area. They don't want to be bothered with you. And so, you know, people just have to be aware that there are things out there, but understand that they're not out there waiting, lurking, stalking you and ready to attack. They really don't want to have anything to do with us any more than we do with them. And, you know, it's just being aware that they are there and, you know, watching where you step, right?
Definitely. And I would have to share, since you mentioned Central Florida, I spent as a 23-year-old 66 days in the Ocala National Forest wilderness. At that time, I didn't know a lot about the outdoors. It was one of my most earliest major experiences out there. And boy, I ran afoul of everything from fire ants to ticks to poison ivy. I swam with alligators. And I got through it just fine by myself. So, you know, nature, you have to pull something pretty stupid to get a real Darwin Award out there. And while I did a few kind of inane things in my youth, you know, if you have some sort of knowledge, it's going to get you through most of the time unless you're really bad luck.
Exactly, because, like I said, most of the wildlife doesn't really want to encounter us either. So, you know, they kind of leave us alone as long as we leave them alone. Well, I grew up near the Ocala National Forest and went down that river in a canoe one time. It was absolutely beautiful in the fall with the golden canopy of leaves over us. It was wonderful. But getting back to your classes, we have the fall coming up. I know you have class is specific for each season. What classes do you have coming up for this fall?
You know, we do custom-make classes, as we said before, not only for individuals, families, et cetera, but we custom-make them within a season. That's correct. So, for instance, a class we have coming up in October, for instance, is a very popular one called Wilderness Survival Kit or Stone Age Survival Kit. And we say Stone Age Survival Kit because, you know, there are a lot of groups and schools out there that offer, hey, let's put a survival kit together. You can watch on YouTube and see that. We're telling you, no. You're not going to go to the store. We're going to go to nature, be it a desert, the woods, what have you. We're going to find every single thing you might need, and we're going to fabricate and make everything from those objects which you collect. And so you wind up with over 20 items that could potentially save your life. Now, of course, we teach the skills that will preclude you from needing those things. So, you know, you may not need them, but they'll be there for you. They all fit within a small knotted net bag of your own making. And in those 20 items, for instance, you have a torch, you have a flint napping kit, a fire by friction kit, a mini digging stick, a survival whistle, and even a medicinal fungus. So, you know, it really covers so many skills in one class. If you could only take one class from us in the survival realm, this would be an excellent one to take, since it's kind of a crash course in quite a variety of skills.
That sounds great.
Along with that, yeah, it is. It is. Really is. And then along with that, we have other survival classes in October, one called Sustainable Survival Shelters. Shelter, of course, being something you can carry with you. And that's a priority, because if you think about it, how long are you going to survive searing heat or freezing temperatures? Less than a day. So it's even more important than, say, water and food and things like that. So it's all natural shelters made only with materials gathered from nature. Okay? But I have to say, too, to balance the equation, we don't just offer survival programs, we also offer nature adventures. So in October and November, for instance, we're going to, say, Parker Canyon Lake, which is a remote lake full of wildlife with opportunities to swim and trek. When we say nature trek, it's kind of a longer, more arduous expedition where you get to have some proper hiking in and things like that. When we say naturalist saunter, that's kind of a slower paced exploration of nature that's not going to cover, say, as much ground. And some of the other nature treks we're going to do, for instance, in October and November, are Aravaita Canyon Wilderness, which, imagine, you have giant saguaros cascading down the walls of canyons right to where there's perennial streams full of native fish where you can actually snorkel. It's not your picture of Arizona. It's really, really stunning. We also do Saguaro National Park. Sonoyta Creek Natural Area is right around the corner from us. You can almost throw a stone there, and hardly anybody goes there. It's a well-kept secret, but it's just so beautiful, and we're excited to take people there and show them the fabulous wildlife and plants, geology, and everything. So, you know, we really run a gamut of classes, and I would add to that, we also offer skills classes, and I say skills classes like naturalist classes. For instance, we have two botany classes coming up this fall. One is called an Introduction to Field Botany, where you go out and learn how to find and identify a wide range of native plants from the lower elevation of the Sky Islands, say the grasslands and deserts.
We use what altitude would that be?
Sorry?
What altitude would that be?
That altitude would probably range from about 2,000 feet to about where we are at about 4,000 feet.
That's
a great question.
Okay.
And during that process, you're going to learn the science that it takes to put some plant within a plant family, okay? In other words, have a known path, a key, if you will, in order to identify things. I mean, think about it, Caroline. People know more TV jingles than they do native plants in their own backyard. It's insane when you think about it.
Oh, I know.
And we do to finish. Yeah, they do. It's really crazy. When you think about it, you know, identifying plants is a key thing. A lot of people are, let's see birds, let's see big wildlife. But plants are always just there. And if you don't know what they are, that's kind of absurd. It's like going into your house and not knowing what the furniture is, which is always there. Of course you know what your furniture is. Now, as a follow-up to that class, we have Field Botany 2. Now we're going to take you to the higher elevations, from about 4,000 feet higher, up to the spruce fir forest. So this way you learn the whole gamut of plants that are around here.
And this is why the classes change seasonally, because, of course, since we are very lucky to have such different seasons and differences in elevation, then as a result, we also have very different plant communities and wildlife and birds and so forth. So we change the schedule according to the season, and we take people to showcase the very best that we have to showcase given the time of the year that people are either visiting or signing up for the class.
Mm-hmm. Tell us once again when that survival class is and this shelter class. Those are two very important classes. What were the dates on those?
On the Wilderness Survival Kit, we're looking at October 3rd. And then we do try to pair classes, too, in case you want to come and camp here. We have a beautiful campground and all the facilities you could possibly need. It's not roughing it here unless you want it to be. And so that's October 3rd for the Wilderness Survival Kit, and then followed by October 4th, Sustainable Survival Shelters.
Ah, okay. So that would be a great, great pairing to do both of those, because shelters, like you said, are so important. I'm curious about in the desert, what kind of shelter, because there's not a lot of growth out there or a lot of debris or anything that you can make shelters with. What are you using for shelters in the desert?
You know, I'll answer that with kind of an Eastern answer first. I grew up in the northeastern United States, and there I learned to construct a wide variety of wigwam-type shelters. So if you say wigwam, people will generally conjure up an image of one thing or another. It could be cone-shaped, could be domed. So I took that concept out here when I moved to the West long ago, and to a wikiup. Now, a wikiup is an equivalent term to wigwam, only in the western United States. And within that, we make, indeed, domed ones, cone-shaped ones, irregular-shaped ones. You have to, and I stress this in the shelter class, adapt to the exact environment that you have to be in at the time. In other words, you know, you may need to use something as meager as tumbleweeds or a few grasses that are around, or you may have an exuberance of materials, say, downed pine limbs along with pine bark, and the sky's the limit. So you have to be adaptable. We don't teach cookbook, cookie-cutter type solutions in terms of survival skills. Doesn't make any sense. And also, I would add, in some of our survival shelters, many of them, we've employed non-native grasses, say, Lehman lovegrass from South Africa. One way to get rid of some of the invasive and non-desirable plants that have come in due to introduction is to actually make them a commodity and use them. So we're always looking for what we call twofers. If we can build a survival shelter that's functional and yet help the land rather than hurt it, we're very happy indeed.
Great idea.
The earth stewardship, the earth stewardship component, it's present every day in everything we teach and in everything we do, because we consider ourselves very fortunate to be the stewards of the land, both at the 42 acres here that we have a Raven's Nest and the 50-plus that we have in Raven's Mountain in the Chiricahua area. So we are removing non-native plants, and then we reuse those for shelter making. And it is our Stone Age village. It's actually built from all those otherwise non-useful plants and non-native plants that we removed and pulled, and we put together a beautiful encampment for people to take most of the classes in that beautiful rustic setting.
Ah, yeah, that's wonderful. Well, there's so many things. I know when people are lost in the desert or in the woods, most of them don't know what to do. They don't know how to find their way out, and a lot of them end up walking in circles. So many people, their bodies are found, you know, they were lost in the wilderness or lost in the desert somewhere, and they find that this person has walked in circles. Would you explain why that happens and how to counteract it?
You know, walking in circles is an easily proven thing. I often take, say, kids and get them to a rather straight area, say, an arroyo, or even back when I taught in the East and such, to, say, a football field or a playing field. I would blindfold them and then have them try to walk a straight line. And almost invariably, you could tell which side they were dominant on. Because, say, if you're right-legged as well as right-armed or right-handed, your right leg is probably going to have denser muscles and stronger muscles, making for a shorter step on that side. So you will tend to walk towards your dominant side. And that can easily translate into walking in circles. And also combined with that, Caroline, is the fact that most people don't pay much attention to what they consider window dressings when they're in a survival situation. The trees around them, the rocks, the streams. To them, it all starts to look the same because panic sets in. So indeed, when you say most people go into the woods, they'll get lost, and they're not aware, we say, hey, use the acronym STOP. It's a very simple one. A lot of people who teach survival use it. Sit, think, observe, and plan. And that plan should involve trying to compensate for walking in circles, which should mean every now and then, if I'm right-sided, which I am, I'm going to take a few steps to my left if I'm trying to make a straight line. If I hit a tree, for instance, and that was my straight line, I'm going to go to the left of that tree. And by and large, that should correct the idea that you're going to go in a wide circle.
Mm-hmm. Isn't there a way of balancing the body, though, by carrying a weight, like a rock, in the pocket of that side that you're favoring, or the other side, I guess, that would cause you to be more balanced and to walk straight?
Yes, I would call that a more minor component of it for me personally, though everyone's different. But indeed, if you tend to be, say, right-sided again, and you're carrying, say, binoculars or a pack slung over one shoulder, carry that on your left side, and that'll help you maybe go to that side a bit more.
Okay, these are such valuable little tips that people need to know. It's just like I heard that it's dangerous to wear all cotton clothes out in the wilderness if you get lost or you get into a problem, because cotton wicks water. If you get the corner of a jacket wet, pretty soon the whole jacket is going to be wet. And
that's correct in a sense. Cotton can kill you if you get it soaked and you get hypothermic and such. By the same token, what do we do before all these newfangled, if you will, concoctions like polypropylene, Gore-Tex, and all these things? People wore cotton, silk, wool, and fur. Okay, not, you know, like fur to have style, but fur to keep them warm. Okay. So if you think about it, you know, you can do just fine with natural fabrics, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But we're being sold by various companies, some of them environmentally responsible, mind you. We're being sold on all these kind of new synthetics, if you will. Well, you know, we're being guinea pigs because we don't know the effects of all these upon our skin. We do know the effects upon the environment. Unfortunately, they're very bad. Mm-hmm. So what I say to people is, if you're going to wear cotton, fine. Combine it with some silk, put wool over it. Don't just wear cotton. I don't think a shred of anything unnatural, say maybe a raincoat, and I even have a natural raincoat. Here I am to tell the tale, and I've been in many situations where I could have gone hypothermic. And to finish, I have a friend, Don. He's an extreme skier in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, where the weather is infamous. And he says the same thing. He says, wow, you know, I wear cotton all the time, and, you know, I'm about 55, and here I am. So, you know, when they say cotton kills, you take it with a grain of salt, as they say.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good. I'm glad to hear that, because I prefer natural fabrics myself. And however, cotton does wick, so you want to be careful about getting any part of it wet.
if you're in a situation where
it's cold and it's windy and things like that, could cause you some severe problems. Okay. Well, I'm really excited about everything that you're doing. And I want everybody, I think everyone should take the survival class. Everyone needs to know how to take care of themselves and how to recognize plants. I mean, you're right. So many people today don't know any plants. And it's like opening a book. And if you don't know how to read, all that, those lines of black lettering and all mean nothing to you. But if you know how to read, there's so much wisdom there, so much value there in a book. And nature's the same way. The plants are there for us, and they have everything we need if we know which ones are which and how to use them, you know? You teach some of
Absolutely.
That, too, don't you?
Yes, yeah. And we give people, I wanted to mention as well, speaking of simple things to know, when people come out for a survival class, we present them with survival scenarios. So that no matter where you live and no matter what background or climate you're coming from, all these survival scenarios will apply to you. And so it is fascinating, not only because people get into a teamwork type of activity, imagine that an emergency happened with your family or a group of friends, what have you, and imagine you're presented with this situation, what would you do? And it's fascinating to see people that consider themselves pretty good outdoor people, to see how they react to these scenarios and the lack of basic common sense knowledge that lies out there in terms of what to wear, what to carry, the choices that you make when confronted with a difficult situation. So that range from a car accident on the road, in the dark, in the middle of nowhere, to being bitten by a rattlesnake, which can happen to anybody, anytime, in any state that have these creatures. So it is very, very fascinating because the classes that we teach are adaptable to wherever you live. Of course, you're learning here in the Sky Islands, which has a very interesting level of diversity, but there are situations that would apply from wherever in the country you come from and you're visiting.
That's the thing that people need to know, is how to react to being caught in a situation that they did not expect and perhaps have never been in their lives. I mean, even things like airplane crashes and things like that, where people are stranded in a jungle or you know, someplace miles away from civilization. And they do need to know, like, there are certain steps. For instance, what would the first thing be? To make a shelter? To find water? To see what's edible?
Really depends upon the situation, Caroline, because, you know, every survival situation obviously is quite different. But generally speaking, the order of things would be, of course, to take care of any injuries and not create any more injuries in that process. Okay, but beyond that, you know, your basic survival strategy should be to secure both shelter and fire. Why that combination? You know, depending upon where you are, you may not need a shelter. It might just be the shade of some deciduous or evergreen trees. But surely you're going to need a fire to keep, say, the insects away, to give you light. And if you're by yourself, to give yourself companionship for a psychological edge as well. Having fire, distinguishing yourself as a human being. Because if you think about it, there's no other creature on earth that makes fire and uses fire. You could say, well, humans use tools. That's not correct, okay? There are many other creatures that use tools. So take care of your shelter and then your fire. And then quickly, soon thereafter, you're going to need to secure very safe drinking water. Now, I say very safe. You may have to drink out of a puddle with rodent feces in it. I've had to do that, okay? But I knew medicinal plants from the area, so I chewed them immediately afterwards and dealt with it. Now, people might say, well, why didn't you make a tea? Well, you know, I just didn't happen to have my butler with me. And, you know, making a tea out in the wilderness when you're up against it is not an easy thing. So I keep practical, immediate, what can you do type stuff. And, hey, once you take care of your shelter, your fire, your water, and then finally food is last, because we can last quite a long time without food. Then we get into the more luxuriant kind of, hey, this can turn into fun type, you know, things. But we teach the basics at first so that you will react like a knee-jerk reaction when you're thrust into a survival situation. Because think about it. It's not a survival situation in the extreme if you're anticipating it. Okay, you don't anticipate it. That's what makes it such a dire strait, perhaps. So, you know, you have to be empowered with these skills. They have to be ingrained. So you're going to use them even if you're not at the top of your game and you're hurt, you're lost, psychologically beaten down, whatever.
Right. There's nothing like being prepared. And that's what you teach, is how people can be prepared for these kind of things. It's awesome. I think everyone should have this class. I don't know why we don't teach things like that in schools, so that, you know, people have that connection with nature. And I found it so interesting when you talk about chewing some medicinal plant after drinking what could be bad water. Because, of course, you know, we're all just taught, well, you boil the water first. But if you don't have something to put the water in to boil it, what do you do if you're desperate to drink water? So there are plants out there that we could chew afterwards, which would take care of the parasites or whatever might be in the water.
Yeah, I can only speak from my personal experience. I don't encourage people, of course, to drink out of suspect sources of water.
Not.
But again, you may not have a choice. You may not have a choice, right? And so I drink from whatever wild sources I come across, and some of them I know are suspect. I did it on purpose to kind of see, hey, what can I pass on to my students? And what I've learned is if you do drink from a less than desirable source, you're going to want to, say, choose something like Arizona spruce, which, mind you, is found mostly around here, but juniper, a close relative, also in the cypress family, you know, can do for you. And for me, I have had a few cases of Giardia in my life, but they've mostly dealt with drinking water, say, in a foreign country. I've had very good luck drinking from wilderness sources, and I attribute it to putting that dose of, say, chewed medicine into my system. Now, that's a twofold answer to the possibility of waterborne infections. One part is, of course, it's giving you a medicinal component. It's giving you something that is an anti-Giardia type thing, like Arizona cypress can do. But by the same token, and maybe more importantly, it's also giving you a psychological edge. You feel empowered. You don't feel like, oh, boy, when's it coming? When am I going to get roaring diarrhea? When am I going to get dehydration and maybe die out here? You're thinking, wow, I just put a really powerful medicinal plant in me. I bet that'll deal with it. I trust you. You're trusting in nature, and that is key. Survival attitudes are key to surviving, bottom line.
Oh, that's great. Well, we do have a caller online. Just a moment. Well, we had one. Okay, I don't know where she went. Maybe she's going to call back. So, anyway, yes. Okay. But while I have you on the line, before we are off, I do want to make sure everyone knows how to reach you, and that's natureschool.com.
Our website is www.ravensnatureschool.com. Okay. Ravensnatureschool.com. If you Google Raven's Way Wild Journeys, you'll certainly get to us. And then all of our contact information is at the bottom of every page on the website, so it's infinitely easy to contact us. And I have to say, too, as opposed to some survival schools, we're very approachable. We want to talk with you on the phone. We want to communicate via emails. And, again, we want to custom-make programs that suit exactly what you want. So we tell people, if you don't see what you want on the calendar, what you want to do is contact us and work it out with us. Okay. So, again, it's www.ravensnatureschool.com. And we'd love to have you visit the site and figure out what you want to take. And there's something for everybody. I think that is another strength of ours, which is we cast a very wide net in trying to attract people to nature. Now, that reflects both our background, our knowledge, the skills that we have, and also the idea that, wow, we can't read your mind. We're not sure what's going to hook you into nature and keep you there. So we're going to hook you with astronomy, maybe, we don't know, or a class on geology, or a survival class, or a nature track. So we do try to cast that proverbial wide net, and then you decide within that what really floats your boat.
And we are very accessible because we're just an hour and a half away from the Tucson airport and 3 hours from the Phoenix airport. And so what's so beautiful about this region is that you take a flight, you're an hour and a half to a beautiful drive in the mountains and in the wilderness, and then you get to this very, very secluded area by Patagonia Lake. And it's a completely different world. But when you think about it, accessing from all major cities in the country is very, very simple.
Okay, that's wonderful. I so appreciate you being on the show. We are running out of time here, so we'll have to wrap up. But thank you, Vincent and Claudio. You are wonderful, and the information you have to share with the world is so valuable. So thank you very much.
We really appreciate being here, Caroline, and anytime you want us on, we'll be happy to be here. More importantly, we'd love to get people out here so we can teach them. You know, it's a long road to make changes in a world that's wounded, but we can make them. There are many of us on the earth, and we all decide to make positive changes in our lives vis-a-vis the environment. We're going to do it, and we need to do it right away.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Thank all of you listeners for being with us today. You can check with me at shamanskeep.com, www.shamanskeep.com. And I have a number, phone number you can reach me at, 358-0530. I'm sorry, 702 is the area code, 358-0530. For counseling, for appointments, any questions you might have, anything you'd like to share. And thank you so much for joining us today. Until next week, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence. Thank you. Have a beautiful week.